Well, good morning out there on this beautiful Wednesday, June 15th morning. You've tuned in to the KRFY Morning Show. And I'm Susie Perez, one of your hosts this morning.
And I'm your co-host. Good morning, Susie. This is Chris Bessler.
Good morning, Chris. And it is a beautiful morning. You know, it got very cold last night.
It did. In fact, I had heard there were some indications there might be frost in some of the low-lying areas. I don't know if we've had any reports of that.
Well, I looked on NOAA, and the lowest it got in Sandpoint was 34.
34.
But you know how those frost pockets can happen. So it was a frost warning.
So, yeah, some people probably had problems with their starting gardens.
Yeah, it was suggested to cover everything up if you're in one of those areas. Mm. And I even did that just because I didn't want to lose my new tomato plants. Yeah. So, speaking of the weather,
we have a great show for folks today. We are talking with three of the folks from Bonner General Health. We have with us, and we're going to be talking specifically about the Bonner General Health Stroke Program, which just landed a nice award of excellence. And we have with us in the studio Terry Fortner. She's the Director of Community Development. We have as well Mike Taylor. He's the Emergency Department Manager. And Michelle Tucker, she's the Rehabilitation Director for Bonner General Health. And we're going to be talking about stroke specifically and what kinds of services Bonner General offers, as well as some health alerts that people should be paying attention to, because stroke is a serious medical condition. It's actually, as we just discovered, the number five killer of people in America.
Okay, and before we get into that very interesting, I think, and helpful discussion with these folks here, from the National Weather Service, currently we're probably about 47 degrees out, mostly sunny today, a high of 61 with variable winds 5 to 8 miles per hour in the morning. Tonight, partly cloudy with low around 40, which again means in those frost pockets, it could be frozen or, you know, we might get some frost. Southwest winds 5 to 7 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening. So when the sky is clear, that's when the cold comes in. Thursday, a slight chance of showers with thunderstorms, also possible after 11 a.m., partly sunny with high near 62. Chance of precipitation is 20% tomorrow. That's Thursday. And Thursday night, mostly cloudy with lows around 43, so warming up a little bit at night. And from there, we're looking into Friday and Saturday, 30% to 40% chance of precipitation, highs 68 and lows 47.
And it's actually a glorious morning out there right now, though. It's a beautiful blue skies and sunshine. Also happening outside, sunrise this morning was at 4:44 a.m. It sets at 8:48 p.m. And the daylight we've gained in the past 7 days per day is 6 minutes. That's just about to come to an end because we're very near the summer solstice, which is June 20th. And at that point, they start getting a little bit shorter. So I'm not going to dwell on that, I promise. Also happening outside, the stream flows. Rivers have come down quite a bit. Priest River is now flowing at 1,430 CFS. It's down 890 CFS in just the past week. Moye River is at 663 CFS. It's down 377 CFS in the past week. And that means we're way past the peak of our spring runoff for those rivers, which are actually have some nice whitewater runs on them.
Before we get started, also, I'd like to just give a shout out and thank everyone for helping make the KRFY 88.5 2016 annual membership drive a success this last weekend. If you did not have an opportunity to donate and become a member, you can still do that by going to our website. We have a secure PayPal button. But I also want to thank some folks that made it possible. Evans Brothers Coffee for their outstanding coffee that we drank by the gallons. Sandpoint Property Management for providing a venue for this event. And Josh from Laser Image for making sure we had the hookups for our remote broadcast. And all the volunteers and musicians and new and renewing members.
So yes, thank you. Thank you. It was really quite a cool event. And I will say we had very nice support for KRFY. during our membership drive. Mm-hmm. I think we, how many new members did we pick up?
37 new members and 60 renewing, but you know, they're still coming in the door.
And they should. And anybody that's listening to this that hasn't decided to be a member, it's pretty easy to be a member of KRFY. You can go to our website, KRFY.org, or give us a call at
265-2992.
And we'd be happy to make you a member. And really, just about any donation amount works. We can suggest donation amounts, but what we really want is to pull people in and make them understand this is a community radio station, and your support is what is going to make it happen.
Yep. It was really fun to be on a street corner in downtown Sandpoint broadcasting for 2 days and have the community coming in and out of the door and getting to know KRFY, our community radio station.
Yeah, we had a whole bunch of live concerts there in that demonstration studio.
12 different musicians came in, including the Sandpoint Music Conservatory, or the Music Conservatory of Sandpoint, and it was great music. I just really want to say thank you to the musicians.
And they loved it. Shout out to the musicians, other things that are going on in town this week, of course, there's always a ton going on. Art Walk opens up on Friday. The Chafe bike ride happens on Saturday. Pondere Winery has their annual anniversary party from Friday through Sunday. The Pondere Chorale and Orchestra is playing Friday and Sunday. There's a Battle of the Bulls at the fairgrounds on Saturday. As usual, way more stuff happening in our town than you can do it all. But if you want to check these events out, they're on our website, KRFY.org. We have a complete community calendar. And at the end of the show, I think we'll be able to come back and talk about what's going on in town a little bit more.
In detail.
And with that, we'd like to get on to today's program. Again, we have in the studio with us today, Terry Fortner from Bonner General Health. She's the Director of Community Development. We have Mike Taylor. Actually, Terry, say hi so we get a fix in your voice.
Good morning. Thanks for having us again, Chris.
Yes, yes.
And Susie, always good to see you both.
Yes, thank you for coming in. We have Mike Taylor. He's the Emergency Department Manager at Bonner General Health.
Good morning, and thank you for giving us this time to get this message out to the community.
And as well, we have Michelle Tucker. She's the Rehabilitation Director.
Good morning, and thank you for having us.
All right. Well, thank you all for coming in. And we want to talk today about the Bonner General Health Stroke Program, which actually just landed a nice award of excellence. Okay, why don't you tell us what the program is in a nutshell, and then we have a lot of different questions to dive into.
Sure. Actually, we got three awards recently. So the stroke program is an evolution. It began probably about 2 years ago when we looked at a national demographic map for stroke mortality. And we all know the Southeast is what's known as a stroke belt, higher prevalence of strokes because of several issues, hereditary and lifestyle and diet. And we noticed that the northern tip of Idaho is just as purple on the map as the stroke belt in the Southeast. So we analyzed that and said, well, it can't be heredity. It cannot be diet so much. What could the problem be? And we deduced that perhaps it's community education and lack of resources in the local community. So we undertook an initiative to bring a higher caliber level of stroke care to our local facility. We partnered with Providence Health System out of Spokane to develop a telemedicine program whereby we have a robot in our emergency room, and we are in direct communication, video and audio, with a neurologist and interventional radiologist at Spokane who can in real time assess the patient along with us, help guide our emergency physicians in treatment decisions, and interact with the patient and family. So once we got that link established, we are able to provide pretty much comprehensive care for the emergency care of a stroke patient and a direct link directly to the interventional table in Spokane where, as we go on later on, I can explain this, but where they can do interventional clot retrieval inside the brain itself. So we started mapping data, and have progressed into an award-winning emergency department as far as treatment of the stroke.
And you mentioned, I actually only knew of one award. You mentioned you had three awards. Rattle them off for us.
Okay, well, we got the Quality Award from Qualys Health, which is a national quality reporting database for innovation in healthcare. And that was for our telemedicine program that we developed with Spokane. And there's certain measures that guide successful stroke treatment for the emergency situation. One of them is absolutely rapid identification and rapid treatment of the condition. The sooner we start opening circulation, obviously, the better outcome for the patients. One of those measures that they measured was door to CT or the CAT scan time. The standard was 20 minutes. Bonner General just received an award from the Inland Northwest. Fastest door to CT time of 0 minutes. When you arrive into the ER and we assess you, we take you directly to CAT scan. Let's get the imaging going, buying you time. The second award was fastest door to needle time. And I'll explain that as needle time is when we actually push the medication to dissolve the clot. It's called AltaPlace. The standard is within the first hour of arrival, we hit 38 minutes. So we're real proud of our expeditious assessment and initiation of care, and we just received the awards for that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So 38 minutes is fast. It's like winning a marathon or something.
Yes, yeah. It is. And yeah. I'm glad you said the word FAST, because that's what we want to get out today, mm-hmm. is that acronym FAST.
It's essential to the outcome.
Well, the acronym stands for.
Okay, so we want the community to know FAST. And it's an acronym. So FAST, F, this is recognizing symptoms and seeking timely intervention. F stands for facial droop. You may notice a crooked smile. A lot of times people may have a speech problem. That's the S part. But the F is for facial droop. A is for arm weakness. S is for speech difficulty. And T stands for time. It's time to call 911. Do not stay home and assume this is going to get better. It may or may not. We recommend that you immediately activate 911. And I can go into more detail about that because our paramedics have been trained to evolve in this protocol with us as well.
Well, actually, let's take a step backwards. So, you know, I know a little bit about strokes. I know they are caused by blood clots. But give us the textbook definition of what a stroke is.
Okay, well, in simple terms, a stroke is the interruption in blood supply to a portion of the brain. There are two basic types. There's the occlusive stroke, which is a blockage. This could be a blood clot. This could be a piece of plaque that is sheared off, maybe from the carotid arteries. And that's the most common stroke. And then we have what we call the hemorrhagic stroke. And in that case, it is a vessel that is ruptured in the cerebral circulation and has caused an interruption to those brain cells further down from that interruption in circulation.
So does a stroke victim always know they're having a stroke? I've had a couple of personal cases where they weren't even really aware of it, and it's a spouse or somebody else that recognizes that.
True, and the patient may not recognize it. And there are things that we call stroke mimics that can mimic the symptoms of a stroke. If you're familiar with Bell's palsy, it can cause facial distortion from the muscle tension and or relaxation of the facial muscles. You could assume that's a stroke, but sometimes it could be Bell's palsy. People who have low blood sugar have hypoglycemia, oftentimes have periods of confusion and unresponsiveness that can also mimic a stroke. But basically, you're going to notice a weakness. It's usually unilateral on one side of the body or the other. Your gait may be off. You may not be able to hold your coffee cup. It could be as subtle as your writing. Your handwriting has just deteriorated. Memory lapse, confusion, speech problems. Those are the common signs.
So a small stroke, you could actually go undetected for a long time, right? Days, maybe.
True. You know, we all probably have had these moments where we just, you're driving along and you didn't realize you just drove through 3 miles past you. You have like a little blank spot. Sometimes people just have this little pause and they lose concentration temporarily, it rapidly resolves, and they kind of just brush it off as a moment. But this could be what we call a TIA, or transient ischemic attack, which is commonly known in lay terms as a mini stroke. These things often will occur rapidly with no warning and resolve just as quick as they came on, but they are a warning sign that you may have an impending stroke coming.
There's a big one coming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there a particular activity or time of day where somebody might experience a stroke? Does it happen more at night, or does it happen after they've been out on a vigorous walk, or are there correlations like that?
Doesn't seem to be. They can happen anytime. Unfortunately, you can have a stroke in your sleep, and then this is real crucial to our therapy, is last known well time or time of onset. Usually people who have what we call wake-up strokes are not a candidate for some of the treatment, only because we cannot determine the time of onset. But I've had people that have had the wake-up strokes. We've had people in the middle of activity, people cooking breakfast. So there's really no set pattern to time or what initiates the stroke.
Mm-hmm. Age groups, I assume older people are more susceptible to...
They are. Over 60, you have a higher percentage. And again, if you look at the disease process, if it's been a progressive narrowing of the vessel and or partial occlusion of the vessel, the body is pretty amazing. The body will start doing what we call collateral circulation in the different tissues, where little arteries will branch off, before the blockage, around the blockage. And they may have had a stroke and partial occlusion, and, those patients tend to have more prevalence of the disease, but also they tend not to be quite as significant as a younger person can have a stroke. We can have strokes in teenagers, and that's devastating because they really don't have any collateral circulation there.
We're talking about some of the risks. This is 88.5 KRFY, and this is The Morning Show. And we're here with our friends from Bonner General Health talking about some of the symptoms. One of the questions I have in listening to you talk is there's strokes and then there's heart attacks. And so it sounds like from what you've described that a stroke has to do with the brain more than the heart.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, the affected area is the brain, but the heart can precipitate the stroke just as easy. There's certain conditions that you can have. You may have heard of AFib or atrial fib. That's just an irregular pulse of the pump of the heart. And what happens in that case is your ventricle, the actual pumping part that sends it out to the arteries, has what we call stasis, blood that's collected, pooling in there because it's not pumping and ejecting effectively. And it can have the propensity to develop a clot, and all of a sudden you get one good beat and the clot shoots off. So the heart can cause strokes, and that's one of the modifiable risk factors that people can do to prevent a stroke.
So blood clotting, I mean, that can affect other parts of the body, though. It doesn't always go right to the brain, right?
Right.
Yeah. Correct.
And if you, but is there, like, I'm assuming there's a bigger danger if you have a blood clot anywhere in your body that it could get up to the brain.
True. If you're coming from heart origin, you're going to look at what we call a pulmonary embolus, which is a massive clot into the pulmonary arterial circulation. Obviously, it's going to cause shortness of breath, chest pain, and can be fatal. And then the other site it's going to go to predominantly is going to be the brain.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that folks over 60 or more inclined to this condition. Is it more prevalent with one gender or the other?
Ironically, it's more prevalent in females for some reason. Yeah.
So, ladies, you should pay attention.
It's stress.
It's stress. Stealing with those men, yeah.
Stealing with those men, yeah.
Let's talk about prevention a little bit. I mean, that's always better than treatment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do people head off the potential for a stroke?
Well, you have risk factors. They're called modifiable and unmodifiable risk factors. And the unmodifiable risk factors include age, heredity, race, sex, and prior strokes, TIAs, or heart attacks. Not much you can do about that. However, the modifiable risk factors that we are all in control of: high blood pressure, cigarette smoking, diabetes, carotid or artery disease, peripheral artery disease, atrial fibrillation, other heart disease, sickle cell disease, high blood cholesterol, poor diet, and physical inactivity.
And so those are conditions that you would discover in the course of a physical exam with your doctor, I presume.
True, yep.
And there are, what kind of treatments do they have if they detect, okay, you're looking like you're developing arterial sclerosis or something like that?
Yeah, well, importantly, blood pressure is very important. There is really no, quote, normal number. It's pretty individualized, but there are certain parameters that your physician wants to maintain your blood pressure, and that can be controlled through diet, exercise, and or medication. Cigarette smoking is a no-brainer. We can just stop smoking. Diabetes, know your glucose levels. It's real important, just like knowing your cholesterol levels. And again, those can be controlled with diet, exercise, and or medication. Atrial fibrillation, people with atrial fibrillation need to have what we call thin blood. It helps to go through some of the narrowing and also to reduce the propensity to have a clot develop. Sickle cell disease, that is probably nothing too prevalent here, but again, medication, hydration is huge in that area. And then diet and physical activity. There's a thing called body mass index, and Michelle can probably speak to that better than I can later, but it's important to know what your BMI is and to get that BMI into a healthy range.
Mm-hmm.
So we're here talking about the stroke program at Bonner General. And so someone comes in to the emergency room, and Mike, you are the emergency department director and have developed this program with your partners here. We have a partnership that you talked about with Sacred Heart for, and that was a big part of putting this program together. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Oh, absolutely. this partnership through telemedicine with Sacred Heart has given us the opportunity to bring, let's call it, big city urban expertise to a small country rural area. It's worked out great for us. Again, it's a two-way video audio interaction where the interventionalists at Spokane can actually dial in, look at the patient, look at their numbers. They can display the CAT scan at the same time, which we already have done by the time they get on. And we can make timely decisions and expedite the treatment. So, and that's also given our, we don't have neurology at our hospital or in this community, but it's given our board-certified emergency room physicians that neurological expertise backup.
And then if it was determined that they really needed more care than at Sacred Heart, you mentioned before we started the show that you can help facilitate quick response. Obviously, they probably would be on a heart flight to Sacred Heart, but when they get there, they're not going back into the emergency room. They're going directly to surgery through this tele-partnership.
Exactly. And that's one of the big gains that we have is we streamline that whole intake process. There's two measures to treatment for the acute stroke patient. Is timely administration of the clot buster. IV, and then timely follow-up interventional retrieval where they actually go up inside the brain's circulation to retrieve a clot. And there's time constraints, and that's why time's so important. If your symptoms are longer than 3 hours of onset by the time you come to us, you're not a candidate for the IV thrombolytics. You are still a candidate for 6 hours, to have the retrieval device implanted and inserted and have the clot retrieved out to about 6 hours. So that's why fast is so important. The sooner you get in, the more brain cells that can be salvaged.
So, to underline that, speed is very important. If you detect any of these symptoms and you think you may be suffering a stroke, even a small stroke, it's very important to get into the emergency room.
Absolutely. And again, not everybody is a candidate for either of the therapies. And that's part of the screening, rapid screening process that is done with the emergency department physician and the interventionalist at Spokane. So if you're a candidate, we want you in here, and we don't know you're a candidate until you get here. We would like to use like the golden hour rule, just like trauma statistics have shown. The earlier the intervention, the decrease in mortality and morbidity of the patient.
Mm-hmm. I know one of the things that someone who might have one of those symptoms that you described, the FAST symptoms, they might brush it off. We easily brush these things off and go, oh, well, that's nothing. And you certainly, some people might not feel comfortable calling 911 and having an ambulance show up, and I feel better already. Why are you guys here? Can people just walk in, or could they call the emergency room and say, I'm having these symptoms, what should I do? Because sometimes you need someone to kind of consult with.
Yeah, well, obviously you can walk in, but again, we brought EMS into the fold of our program because they're often the eyes and ears of the emergency department. They're out there seeing and doing things and smelling and feeling and touching things that we can't. So we have a robust relationship with them. Whereas if you call EMS right now with a stroke symptom, you're going to have a stroke scale assessed on you. You're going to come to the ER with an IV already in you. You're going to come to the ER with blood samples drawn. You're going to come to ER with a blood sugar. That front end work has just saved us 20 minutes of time in the emergency department, which is 20 minutes time to your brain cells. So my recommendation is do call 911 because a lot of that care will be initiated prior to arriving at the emergency department.
Even if they're out in a remote area where it takes the 20 minutes for the ambulance to get out there, it's still advisable to call for an ambulance rather than bundle somebody up and try to get them in.
It is. And if you're very remote, and again, time is of the essence on this, there's nothing wrong with if it's feasible for the patient to go in a car, if they're capable of getting up to walk to get in a car, and to stay in touch with the 911 center and do an intercept. The ambulance can intercept you halfway from mm-hmm. where you were, mm-hmm. especially if you're way out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think you hit the nail on the head, though, Chris, is that, and what Mike's saying is that our patients don't always realize that they're having a stroke, whether it's ischemic or hemorrhagic. And so we're asking everyone in the community to familiarize themselves with signs and symptoms of stroke, because it might be you, let's say at a Keoki launch party, who notices someone isn't behaving quite right. They go to smile, part of their face droops, they've got weakness, or speaking is a problem. You might very well be the one who saves that person's life, or at the minimum, increases their outcome, you know, and improves their quality. So
it's really wise for everybody to be aware of the symptoms of stroke, not just for themselves, but for their loved ones and their friends.
Exactly.
And, people they come in contact with. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how long has there been a focus on strokes at Bonner General Health with an official stroke program like this?
Well, it's officially we've been evolving for 2 years. We just have our first complete year of data that we have ran, and I can share some of the statistics with you, which are pretty awesome. For 2015, we had 53 patients arrive in our emergency department with stroke symptoms. Out of that 53, only 5 came within a timely window where we could do intervention. Out of those 5, they were treated. 4 have returned back to pretty much normal function, back living in their home after the IV therapy and the interventional therapy in Spokane, and have resumed normal daily function. As you may not know, stroke is the number one admission criteria for long-term care placement. When you have profound stroke and those symptoms don't go away, you are totally dependent care. And if you could think of this as being trapped in your body, your mind is sound, you hear, you see, you sense, but your body just doesn't function. It's I couldn't imagine being in that environment for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you said he had 53 people come in, but only 5 were in that golden hour window, if you call, if you want to call it that, where you could take that effective early treatment that could really reverse the effects of the condition.
True, because statistics and studies have proven that, you know, that if we initiate treatment later, there is certain side effects and can be catastrophic reactions to the treatment. So the treatment window is a pretty solid 0 to 3 for the IV, 0 to 6 hours for the interventional. Anything outside of that, we have to do what is called a benefit risk assessment, because one of the side effects of the drug and the intervention is we can cause intracranial bleeding or bleeding in the brain.
Is part of the treatment thinning the blood right away? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's the drug that we administer. It's called a thrombolytic. And then what it does, to break it down, it lyses or destroys clots. And it's a brand name drug called Altaplace. And that drug, from the time you hit our door, best practice indicates you have to have that administered within 1 hour. If you hit the door with a 2 hour onset of symptoms before you get to us, you're pinning us down to really having to work fast for that 1 hour. We can do it. Mm-hmm. We've demonstrated that we can do it. So we're really excited about the awards that we've received.
If it's past the 3 hours where you can be successful in the intervention or hopefully successful, are there alternatives or secondary treatments for those that come in late, the other 49 folks that didn't get in there on time, or 48?
Well, if you hit the 0 to 6 hour window from onset, again, this is the time your symptoms first started, that can be documented, the interventional option is still on the table. But now not every stroke is a clot, so... if you happen to be within a 0 to 6 hour window, our protocol is we do a regular CAT scan of the head, and all we do here is rule out any bleeding issue before we begin treatment. Then we follow it up with what we call a CT angiogram of the head, where we actually use dye and look at the circulation of the brain. And if we can identify a large vessel obstruction out of the 3 major arteries that supply the brain, you are a candidate for retrieval.
You just mentioned that not every stroke is caused by a clot. What are other causes?
You could have plaque rupture, and this commonly comes off of the carotid arteries. Those are the 2 large arteries in your neck. If you watch TV when they're checking for a pulse on somebody they just shot, they're reaching down and they're feeling that carotid artery. So it's...
They're pretending to feel.
Yeah. So the carotids can become, over time... blocked up with plaque, and it could be a simple plaque rupture that comes off that carotid artery, and now we have that up there as well, and not necessarily a blood clot.
Mm-hmm. We've gotten a lot of information, Mike, about strokes in general and the importance of identifying and then acting quickly. Are there going to be opportunities for the stroke program to go out and do outreach in the community? Because it sounds like this information we're hearing today is vital to be able to recognize and then act fast.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to get on top of the mountain and shout the message, but nobody will hear me. But we do plan on rolling this through all the community health fairs. We just recently had a health and safety fair where we had a presentation, and it's really key to educate our public and to get the buy-in there.
And actually, folks will have been seeing some advertising. I've seen it in the Reader and the Bee that the Bonner General is putting out right now on the with that FAST acronym.
So typically, as you are aware, Chris, the month of May is Stroke Awareness Month, and the commitment that Bonner General has made is that every month is Stroke Awareness Month for us, and it really is because of the work of Dr. Ken Gramick and Mike, who is far too humble to say that he really led the charge within our organization to improve community health outcomes for our region, not just for Sandpoint. And so we are committed to not only print, but feature articles in the Reader, in the Bee,
and the Outline,
and on the radio. And we have worked it into our regular advertising rotation that we are consistently messaging fast.
And, I think it's an opportune time to mention that if you're listening to this radio program and you want to share it with anybody, this will be available as a podcast on the carefy.org website. Go to carefy.org, click on the podcast, and you'll be able to hear the recorded version of this And please do pass the word around to folks that should be listening.
And we definitely want to recognize and thank you for providing and putting together a program for our community that brings us a sense of security and getting the word out. It's vital and important. And at some point in time, we want to move to what happens if you do have this stroke.
And the rehabilitation and then the services that are available. Mm-hmm. And we do have Michelle Tucker, the rehabilitation director here. But maybe we should take a short musical break here, give our guests a chance to catch their breath, and then come back and address that question.
Okay, this is Ella Fitzgerald, My Melancholy Baby. And the reason we're playing this song today is because in 1996, on this day, she passed away. And she was 79 years old. So this is Ella Fitzgerald, My Melancholy Baby. We'll be right back. And that was a little bit of Ella Fitzgerald. And as she said, every cloud has a silver lining. And there are interventions that we're talking about from the Bonner General Health. Our hospital has an awesome stroke program, not only how to take care of someone who is having a stroke, but educating our community on signs of and actions that need to be taken to keep people healthy and moving forward in their lives. And then we also have, if that does happen, rehabilitation and how that can make a huge difference. And our guest from Bonner General Health, Michelle Tucker, you want to tell us what we have in that field?
Certainly. Unfortunately, not everybody is a candidate for our stroke treatment in our ED. And with that, often people have symptoms and decreased function as a result of a stroke. And so fortunately, we do have a comprehensive rehabilitation program at Bonner General Health. We have staff that are actually trained specifically in neurotherapy. We have a certified neurophysical therapist. We have highly qualified occupational therapists and speech therapists that can provide services for all signs and symptoms of that relate to having a stroke. When someone has a stroke, Mike was talking about some of the signs or symptoms that you would see in a patient: the facial droop, the muscle weakness, the impaired balance, the cognitive changes, the slurred speech. So if you think about that, all of those disciplines would be required to help a person to regain function. You would need speech therapy. So speech therapy would look at things like your slurred speech, your facial droop, your communication skills. The other thing they would look at is your swallowing, because often the muscles that are required to swallow are also affected. Hmm. And so they would start out with a comprehensive evaluation looking at all of those areas, and depending on what they find in their assessment, they will be treating those areas. So some of the treatments that you would find with a speech therapist would be a bedside swallow study. So they're going to actually have you eat food, drink liquids, determine if you're actually aspirating on any of the liquids. Can you chew your food? Can you swallow your food? And if there's any sign that you could be aspirating your food or your liquids, they're going to take you to our radiology department. And in partnership with our radiologists, they would complete a modified barium swallow study, which they could look at basically when the food enters into the mouth. They can see what happens from the time the food enters the mouth and through the track. So that if you are aspirating in your food, if anything's going into your lungs, we want to make sure that we have the person on their correct diet, because it could create aspiration pneumonia, which could actually lead to death. So it's very, very important that the swallowing is assessed. The other thing that they would look at is your speech. So if you have slurred speech, they're going to be working on just the musculature to help strengthen those muscles to improve that speech. they also are going to look at just the communication. Are you able to communicate your needs? If they can't immediately correct that problem, they're going to be looking at comprehensive type of interventions by providing communication devices. As Mike was sharing earlier, how awful is it to be trapped in your own body and not to be able to communicate your basic needs? So if the person is able to point to a picture of something to drink, or I need to go to the bathroom, or whatever that might be at the time, they would provide like a communication device so that basic communication needs can be met.
There's a lot of different things that can help bring back some quality of life in severe strokes with adaptive measures that you're mentioning. What is the timeline for, I always heard 18 months. You have 18 months to kind of regenerate those brain cells that may have been damaged by the stroke. Is there a set timeline?
I don't think there is a set timeline. I think that, you know, from a rehabilitative perspective, we continue to work with the person as long as they are demonstrating progress. And we use the language, oh, the patient has plateaued, where they're no longer showing progress in this area. And then at that point is when we go into more of the comprehensive or the compensatory type strategies, work with a caregiver and make sure that they are functioning at their highest level and that they have some quality of life.
And so basically you're working with them to do exercises to.
Right. So we were talking about the speech therapist. I'll just finish up with speech therapy. Sure. The other intervention that they also are trained to do, we have certified therapists that can do what we call vital stimulation, which is actually like an electrical stim of the muscles in the throat. And so they can actually work on strengthening the muscles in the throat to help with swallowing, to help with speech. And so all of those interventions would help improve quality of swallow, quality of speech, and improve that part of the person's daily life. The other areas that we would look at from an occupational therapy perspective would be just, can they dress themselves? Can they bathe? Can they take care of their own personal hygiene? All of those things. And they'll look at strengthening the muscles in the arm, the hand, because often you will notice if someone's had a stroke, they have no longer use of their right hand or left hand or arm. And so they're going to work on strengthening those areas, increasing the range of motion. The other thing that we want to prevent is spasticity or tone. And often what happens is they get really, really tight. And we actually are providing serial casting to help prevent contractures so that they can maintain that range of motion to be able to perform functional activities. The other areas, obviously, you want to look at is from a physical therapy perspective, you want to be looking at balance and gait, making sure they have the appropriate assist to the device. We don't want people falling because, as we know, in the elderly population, if someone suffers a fall and then ends up with a broken hip, then that also can increase risk for death. So we are looking at balance and gait, making sure that we're working with the caregiver to make sure that we keep that patient safe.
So what does a treatment program look like? Is it like every day you're working with somebody, or is it three times a week, or how does that work?
Once each individual therapist completes a comprehensive evaluation, there's a treatment plan set up specific for that person. And depending on if it's a mild stroke to more of a profound stroke could determine the number of treatments that a patient would be seen for. But often they would see, if all three disciplines are required, they would be seen up to 3 hours a day, 2 to 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned it varies by patient and according, probably, I'm sure, the severity of the stroke, but can people keep getting better for a long period of time? I mean, Susie had mentioned she had heard 18 months is kind of the limit, but it's my understanding, actually, they can improve for even years.
Absolutely. And I think as therapists are getting higher levels of training, and the type of interventions that we're using are better all the time, that I think people can improve. Another another tool that we have is our AquaFit. Often someone that has had a stroke and has a lot of muscle weakness, we can get them into a pool or into our AquaFit and work with them on balance and strengthening on both upper and lower body. And just that medium alone can continue to help improve level of functioning. Once they are safe in the water, they're showing like increased strength, then we can get them out of the water, we can get them on land, and we can start working with them on land. So there is a progression of how we would actually treat a patient to increase strength, range of motion, balance, safety. The other piece is if we do have someone that has more of a mild stroke, I think sometimes those symptoms can be ignored. As Mike said, sometimes they don't even come into our ED. And they don't even realize that rehabilitative services can actually help them. Sometimes it's like handwriting. They can't write out their checks anymore. Or they're just having some mild cognitive impairments. Or they're, you know, going to reach for something and they kind of are their vision is off. Because vision is affected by a stroke. And so they go to reach for something and it's like they don't quite get their hand on it. It's kind of off just a little bit. And then we call that visual perceptual deficits. And so there's these little things that people may suffer from a TIA or a stroke that may feel like, oh, there's no intervention for that. And we do have therapists that can help it from just mild symptoms to more profound symptoms.
And you provide these services out of the new medical services building?
Our neuro program is actually out of the new health services building.
Yeah.
Correct.
It's a beautiful facility. When you opened up, you had that nice open house, and the tour was enlightening how much they put into that aspect of the hospital care is the rehabilitation services.
Thank you for that. Susie, I think one of the things, too, that Michelle has touched on is really important to remember is that the care is really individualized. And so what her team and her staff do is they really look at you as an individual person who's had this life event, and they work rapidly and in conjunction, in collaboration with one another to really build a good care plan. And a lot of times, once you have progressed to the point of plateau, as Michelle was mentioning, they will send you home with things to keep you moving in the right direction. And so people can still continue to progress and to have good outcomes and good quality of life. And many times it's different from the life they had before. But what I hear in the community development department is just complete sincere gratitude for the folks who are there doing the work with them. In many times you hear things like, they saved my life. So Mike saved his team saves the life in the emergency department. And then people are facing, you know, some deficits physically, mentally, certainly emotionally. It's a bitter pill to swallow when you've had a major life event like that. And so the other side of it is they feel like Michelle and her team has saved their life because they have gotten them back to doing the things that they love to do, whether it's fishing or hiking or camping, playing with their grandchildren, volunteering at their children's school, whatever it may be. They're really working as a cohesive team to keep patients here, keep patients close to home, and help them achieve the best quality of life and outcome possible. Mm-hmm.
And I know rehabilitation services deal with all different kinds of conditions other than stroke as well. But how many patients do you have that are stroke victims that you're helping? Do you know? Have a number for that?
I would say that on any given day, at least 10 of our current caseload would be some sort of neurological condition.
Mm. And does that include also, you mentioned emotional. Are there services that can come in to help the families? And I would say that's counseling.
They're not obviously part of our rehabilitative team, PT, OT, and ST. Mm-hmm. But I think as trained therapists, we're always very perceptive of emotional needs. And obviously, if we felt like they needed other type of mental health counseling, we would refer them to those specialty services. But I do know from an occupational therapy perspective, we are trained in psychosocial rehab, and we're looking at the whole person. And their emotional condition is going to impact their outcome. And so that's always something that we're looking at and working with them on. We're mm-hmm. not going to specifically work with it, but we look at it from a functional perspective and right. encouraging them to participate in their activities. We set very specific goals, and so sometimes we like to set those, we call them short-term goals, and so when a patient sees that they're achieving those short-term goals, it's very motivating, and I think our team is very, very encouraging and thoughtful to all areas of rehabilitative services.
Were you going to say something?
I just wanted to add that, you know, a lot of times one component that we haven't touched on here is that home health care piece. So Bonner General Health, home health care, you know, we have nursing staff and aides who can go and out into the home and help those patients as well. So once you're released from the hospital, you may require additional care, getting you into rehab. There's just all kinds of things. And one of the things, too, that Michelle and her team do is that occupational therapy piece, which I never fully understood until my mother had her first stroke in 2009, the good work that they do in helping people kind of relearn how to do things that they've done for maybe 60 or 70 years. And they're frustrated because they can't believe they can't brush their hair. But here come these, you know, we always called them the super women. They would swing in. They didn't wear capes, but they should have. They would swing in and just put her at ease and work through the process of relearning some of those things. Mm-hmm. But we definitely have, you know, home health care services available as well that help these patients.
And even from an outpatient perspective, the occupational therapist can actually go out into the home and do a home assessment. That's making awesome. Sure that the environment is set up to meet their needs.
And safe.
From their visual mm-hmm. deficits and just safety, mm-hmm. making sure that their bathroom is set up so they don't fall and their toilet is mm-hmm. appropriate height. And there's so much that they can do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Terry Fortner and Mike Taylor, Michelle Tucker from Bonner General Health, thank you very much for coming in today. Do you have any last words you'd like to impart upon the listening audience out there?
Fast.
Remember
learn
that.
It, know fast. It. Fast.
Fast.
And thank you so much for being such a great community mm-hmm. partner with mm-hmm. Bonner General. We appreciate the opportunities to come and talk about our programs. We're obviously mm-hmm. very excited about them, mm-hmm. but we want the community to feel engaged and excited as mm-hmm. well. So thank you.
You're always welcome at KRF.
Yeah. Oh, good Lord. You don't ever tell the community development director that. See you next week.
Well, we will see you again because we like to come back to all the health services that Bonner General Health is providing for the community. So we will have you back in, Terry. We'll probably be talking about other subjects. But
perfect.
Mike
thank you.
And Michelle, thank you very much for being in today to talk about the stroke program.
And thank you for the wonderful work you're doing in our community.
Yep.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And this is 88.5 KRFY. We are going to hear a song by Waylon Jennings. We're not going to hear a song by Waylon Jennings.
Because we're going to run out of time.
It is his birthday today, but we're going to say goodbye to our friends, and then we'll get into a community calendar for a few seconds.
Okay.
A few minutes.
Sure. There's, as always, a ton of things going on around town. Probably the big event that's happening on Friday is Art Walk. That's receptions in 20-plus galleries and shops around town where you can cruise around, enjoy some wine and cheese in many places, and check out art from local artists. And that's happening Friday, basically after work, all around downtown. On Saturday, a couple of big events coming up. There is the Chafe 150 bike ride. You can still sign up for that if you go to chafe150.org. There are rides of 30 miles, 80 miles, and 150 miles if you're an elite bike rider. It's a gorgeous bike ride around the, it goes over to the Bull River Valley and then back to Sandpoint. And the 30-mile ride actually goes out into the Colburn Valley, all gorgeous terrain. It's a super fun event, and it raises money for autism in our community.
And to register for that, you can go online and register at chafe150.org. That's chafe150.org. And that closes on the 15th. That's tomorrow. So
So if you're thinking about it.
That's today, actually.
Yeah. Stop thinking about it. Go to your computer and get
signed
up for that.
Now is the time.
Yeah.
And it's a good cause.
Also going on this week, actually on Friday, there's an event called the Royal Gypsy Takeover. That's at Evans Brothers Coffee. And it's at 6:30 p.m. It features the ferocious urban paintings of Biscuit Street Preacher and the grit and gravy of DJ Cake Mix, plus special guests Aurora Fox Tribal Dance and Cody Newton performing live graffiti creations. It sounds like I have a multimedia thing that would be a ton of fun to go watch. And that's at 6:30 p.m. on Friday at Evans Brothers.
And guess what, Chris? We are out of time. And we do want to remind our listeners that this events calendar that we're talking about is available at krfy.org and also at Sandpoint Online. You can find out all the things that are going on in our community. We're going to sign off and say have a great day.